House Workforce Committee will come to order. Lead Baker, have you had a chance to look at the minutes?
Looking at them right now, Mr. Chair, it looks good. I move to approve the motion, the minutes as presented.
All those approve, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Folks, we have House File 2233, which is the our workforce bill. We spent a lot of time on this bill, hearing from community members and working with staff. So I want to thank our staff from both sides of the aisle and our nonpartisan staff who worked throughout the year to make this happen. And so I'll keep this short because we have a lot of testifiers here today on this bill. But first we'll do a walkthrough. So we'll have Ms. Ng and Charlene to go over the bill, and then we'll have testifiers come and speak.
Mr. Chair and members, Ashley Ng, House Fiscal. I will be reviewing the workforce omnibus-based columns on the spreadsheet, starting with the general fund impact for all agencies, $170,482,000 in fiscal year 24, $161,082,000 in fiscal year 25, $54,782,000 in fiscal year 26, and $54,782,000 in fiscal year 27. Looking at the Workforce Development Fund on line 6, there is no change from the February forecast. So all that is base spending. Going down to the Business and Community Development section, lines 20, there is $10 million in the current biennium for local community child care, $5 million in the biennium for Minnesota Investment Fund child care, and $10 million in the biennium for Community Energy Transition Grant Program. Down to the Employment and Training Division of DEED, the total spending is $176,792,000 for the biennium and $5,400,000 for the tails. The change items start on line 36 with Propel nonprofits at $3.5 million for the biennium, the new Youth at Work competitive grants with $8,960,000 in the biennium, Youth Build with $2,186,000 in the biennium, Minnesota Youth Program with $8,854,000 in the biennium. The Minnesota Technology Association has $2 million in the biennium. The Drive for Five Workforce Fund is $15 million total for the biennium, which is broken out into three program areas. The Targeted Population Workforce Program on line 45 has $60 million for the biennium. And that is broken out into three program areas. Looking at line 49, the return to, line 50, the Office of New Americans receives $3 million for the biennium. Looking at line 51, 30,000 feet, 800,000 for the biennium. And Avivo gets $1,400,000 for the biennium. Better Futures receives $900,000 for the biennium. Eastside Neighborhood receives $1,200,000 for the biennium and is broken out into two program areas. Minnesota Family Resiliency receives $500,000 for the biennium. The International Institute receives $1,100,000 for the biennium. Summit Academy receives $3 million for the biennium. Big Brothers Big Sisters receives $1 million. White Bear Center for the Arts receives $800,000. Bridges to Healthcare receives $1,500,000. Hired receives $800,000. Alliance of Boys and Girls Club receives $2 million. Owatonna and Steele County Workforce receives $600,000. Ujamaa Place receives $2,500,000. Minnesota Diversified Industries, MDI, receives $1 million. Twin Cities Rise receives $2 million. Getting to Work receives $1 million. ProStart receives $400,000. Clues receives $3 million. American Indian OIC receives $1 million. YMCA of the North receives $600,000. Teen Teamworks is $1,500,000. Robotics Team and STEM Internships receives $1,400,000. Clean Economy Equitable Workforce has $3 million. Emerge is $1 million. Project for Pride in Living is $1 million. Pillsbury United Communities is $1 million. Redemption Project is $2 million. Minnesota YWC from Minneapolis is $700,000. Greater Twin Cities United Way is $1 million. Sane Foundation is $3 million. Youth Prize and Youth Prize Kajuk is $6 million. Father Project is $2 million. Hmong American Partnership is $2 million. Social Kitchen is $800,000. African Immigrant Workforce Grant is $2 million. The Hmong Chamber of Commerce is $1 million. Center for Economic Inclusion is $500,000. Minnesota Grocers Association Foundation is $200,000. MICC is $1 million. Ramsey County Milestone Program is $1 million, and Ramsey County Pathway Program is $1 million. Looking down at the General Support Services Division of DEED, there, on line 176, there is the operating increase of $7 million ongoing for per biennium, and then the digital workforce transformation, the governor's rec, is $10 million in fiscal year 24. Down for the in the Vocational Rehabilitation Services Division of DEED. On line 192, there is a new the provider rate increase of $2.5 million per fiscal year, so $5 million per biennium. And 193, there is the employment support for persons with mental illness program increase. That is $4,500,000 for the biennium. And the Centers for Independent Living increase on 195, there's $1,800,000 for the current biennium. In the State Services for the Blind, on line 206, there is $5 million for the State Services for the Blind expansion, and then $5 million in the current biennium for employer reasonable accommodation. And then looking, there's the Department of Corrections Instruction and Employment Partnership Program, which is $4,500,000 for the current biennium and $400,000 in the TAILS. Then the Work Release and Education is $2,500,000 in current biennium and $200,000 in the TAILS. To the Destination Medical Center, there is the statutory increase of $6 million in the current biennium. And that concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Ms. Ng. Ms. Shalene.
Chair and members, Anna Shalene, House Research. I'll be walking through the policy articles, which is just Article 2. Article 2, beginning Section 1, starts on page 25, line 5. This section codifies the Getting to Work grant program to provide, repair, and maintain motor vehicles to help people get to work and maintain employment. This is based on House File 1236 from Representative Cable. Article 2, Sections 2 and 3, these start on page 27, line 11. They modify the Energy Transition Advisory Committee's meeting schedule and expiration date. This is language from the governor's bill. Moving on to Sections 4 through 6, starting on page 27, line 20. These are changes to the Community Energy Transition Grants Program to allow communities around plants scheduled to expire within 15 years to qualify, increase grant limits and uses, allow rolling applications, and fund technical assistance. This language is all based on House File 1398 from Representative Hill. Section 7, starting on page 29, line 3, this section creates the Office of New Americans to assist immigrants and refugees in accessing employment development and workforce services and provide interagency coordination. This is governor's bill language, though there was a version of the bill language carried by Representative Feist. Moving on to sections 8 through 11, starting on page 32, line 9, these sections all make changes to the Youth Build Program to allow participation by low-income rather than just very low-income participants. This means 80% of area median income versus 50%. And it also adds types of structures that can be built under the program, as well as updating a citation. This is all language from the governor's bill. Moving on to section 12, this begins on page 34, line 1. This section establishes the targeted populations workforce grants and to fund entrepreneurial and job training, diversity and inclusion training for small employers, and capacity building for workforce nonprofits. This language all comes from the governor's bill. Moving on to sections 13 and 14, starting on page 36, line 5. These sections increase the Minnesota Youth Program's maximum participant age from 21 to 24. This is based on House File 2127 from Representative Sensor Murrow. Section 15, beginning on page 36, line 27, this just updates the citation for the Youth at Work Program and is language from the governor's bill. Section 16, starting on page 37, line 8, add seasonal or temporary foreign agricultural workers under H-2A visas to the definition of non-covered employment for unemployment insurance purposes. This is based on House File 2248 from Lead Baker. Section 17, beginning on page 40, line 23, requires an annual growth factor adjustment to the reimbursement rates for providers of extended employment services for persons with severe disabilities if funding is available. This is based on House File 1501 from Representative Brand. Sections 18 through 20, beginning on page 41, line 3, these sections make changes to the Destination Medical Center definitions and the transit aid formulas. This is based on House File 2795 from Representative Liebling. Finally, Section 21, starting on page 44, line 7, creates a grant program to reimburse employers for the cost of making reasonable accommodations for employees. This is based on governor's bill language. And that completes the walkthrough.
Thank you, Ms. Jolene. We'll move to testifiers. Testifier list. First is Ms. Jessica Webster. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jessica Webster. I'm a staff attorney with Legal Aid. I also represent a small group of organizations who care about access to unemployment insurance for lower wage workers, including Take Action, Isaiah, Say Tools, CDF, Atwood Center, and the Minnesota Budget Project. Mr. Chair, Legal Aid brought forth a package of reforms to unemployment insurance this session to increase access and equity in the program. I know DEED opposed most of these changes, and they're not moving forward, with the exception of giving people a little more time to file an appeal. We're disappointed that one of the reforms that DEED did not vehemently oppose and that had bipartisan support in this committee is not moving forward, and namely that's that Minnesota is charging predatory rates to people who make mistakes in the unemployment insurance system. A 40% fine, a 12% interest rate sets us as one of the most harsh in the country. Property tax penalties are capped at 10%. The state usury is 6 to 8%. Caps on utility late payments are 18%. Even caps on predatory lenders from Congress for the Military Lending Act are 18%. We're seeing folks at Legal Aid with $2,000 overpayments spiral to $10,000, $12,000, or asking them to repay four times what they owe the state. Mr. Chair, with a $17 billion surplus, we should not be chasing fees and fines on the backs of poor folks. At a minimum, we could drop that 40% to 15, like other states. We could eliminate the interest, like 17 other states. If it's too late this session to decrease these fees and fines on folks, be really helpful to see an instruction to deed to come back next session with a plan to reduce these fees and fines on Minnesotans. Legal aid, deed is telling us that the legislature sets these rates. They're not responsible. The state sets them. And legal aid is imploring our state leaders to reduce these fees and fines like we're doing across all other agencies and all other programs. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Webster. Next is Michael Bolton from Ujamaa Place. Welcome to committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Michael Belton, and I'm the interim CEO of Ujamaa Place. Happily and excitedly, I appear before you today on behalf of our organization, humbled by the Workforce Development Committee's decision to appropriate $2.5 million to Ujamaa Place for fiscal years 2024 and 2025. We are most grateful to Committee Chair Zong and Representative Hussein for your work spearheading these efforts and the team at DEED, especially Larry Eisenstadt, who works closely with Ujamaa Place to monitor and report our performance of state funding. And I apologize for omitting at the beginning that we are grateful to the committee here, the Workforce Committee, and you all. So thank you. The funds will help this organization realize its expansion plans and serve more men in even greater capacity, helping them become productive, contributing members of society and our community. On behalf of the Ujamaa men, our staff, volunteers, and board of directors, thank you for your ongoing commitment to our mission to provide holistic transformation opportunities for young Black men experiencing inequity at the intersection of race and poverty by helping them achieve brotherhood, stability, and personal success. And we look forward to working with you all as negotiations proceed. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Bill. Next is Brian Donaldson from Minnesota Alliance of Boys and Girls Club. Welcome to committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Brian Donaldson from the Minnesota Alliance of Boys and Girls Clubs. Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to come before your committee again and express my deepest gratitude for your unwavering support of Boys and Girls Clubs in the budget. Your commitment to invest in our youth and providing them with valuable workforce skills will pay exponential dividends for years to come. Your support is not only an investment in our youth, but also an investment in the future of our state. By helping young people gain valuable workforce skills, you are helping to build a stronger and more prosperous Minnesota. I want to thank Representative Senator Mura for her support and leadership of our request. I want to thank the chair for his ongoing support of Boys and Girls Clubs and his leadership of this committee. And I also thank the many members who have supported the work of clubs who strive to help youth in our state who need us the most. On behalf of the Boys and Girls Clubs and the countless young people whose lives will be positively impacted by your support, I thank you. Your dedication to improving the lives of our youth is truly inspiring, and I am honored to have the opportunity to express our gratitude today. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Donaldson. Next is Anna Odegaard from the Minnesota Asset Building Coalition. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Chung, members of the committee. My name is Anna Odegaard, and I'm the director of the Minnesota Asset Building Coalition. I'm here to thank Chair Chung and the committee members, also our chief author, Representative Cagle, for including funding in your budget bill for the Getting to Work grant program. You heard testimony on that bill earlier this session from Latoya Whitfield, who shared what it meant for her and her family to be able to access a low-interest vehicle loan through the car ownership program at the CAP of Washington and Ramsey Counties, which is one of the nonprofit organizations that has received grant funding from the Getting to Work program. The low-interest vehicle loan enabled Latoya to maintain her employment, bring her daughters to school activities, help other family members with trips like grocery stores and medical appointments, and also to improve her credit score with every loan payment. Latoya took time out of her busy day to testify to this committee to support the Getting to Work bill because she wanted other families to have that opportunity to build her financial stability, just like she and her daughters did. So I want to thank you for hearing her testimony, including this funding in your budget, so that other families can have that opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Odegaard. Next is Rod Adams, New Justice Project. Welcome to committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Sean, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning on the House Workforce Omnibus Bill. So my name is Rod Adams. I'm the Executive Director and founder of the New Justice Project Minnesota. So the New Justice Project is a black-led organizing hub focused on building power for and with low-income and no-income black Minnesotans by organizing in jobs, housing, and reimagining what community safety looks like in our community. So I would like to thank the chair for the meaningful investment in communities of color in this bill, including the Clean Economy Workforce Grant Program. According to national studies, Minnesota has the third worst racial wealth gap in the country. Beneath these disparities lies the underlying reality of occupational segregation. Black and Latino workers are far more likely to work in low-wage sectors in our economy, the same sectors hardest hit by the pandemic. Workers of color are often underrepresented in fields that offer good wages, benefits, and real career pathways, including the clean energy and energy efficiency sectors. But it doesn't have to be that way. The transition to a clean economy also offers the opportunity to create a more equitable Minnesota. The Minnesota Climate Action Framework, released in September of last year, issued a clear call for investments in workforce training to support the clean economy transition, with the focus on BIPOC communities. Other states are also providing strong examples. For example, Illinois recently committed over $40 million in investments in equitable clean energy career pathways. So every day my organization sees what it's like for families to be trapped in low-wage work with few hopes to build a better future for themselves or their children. We also see a lot of youth in our communities don't have a direct path to a well-paying career after high school. This bill takes a step in bridging the gap between stagnation and economic mobility. Organizations like mine also stand ready to contribute our skills, networks, and expertise to help make a different future possible. So I want to thank Representative Sensamura, and also a thank you to the chair for including the Clean Economy Equitable Workforce Grant Program in this legislation. I will urge your continued support for this and other workforce investments in communities of color in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Pat Sukum, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, Twin Cities. Welcome to committee, sir. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. I'm Pat Sukum, CEO of Big Brothers, Big Sisters, Twin Cities. On behalf of the three Big Brothers, Big Sisters agencies across Minnesota and all the youth we serve, we thank you for inclusion of our work and honestly all the incredible work represented in this room in today's omnibus bill. Thanks to Representative Sensamura for bringing such light to our mission, and Chair Zhang and committee members for your longtime support and partnership around our impact. Last year, we served 4,000 Minnesota youth, 1,700 in our post-secondary and career readiness programs. Research by the Office of the Juvenile Justice, the CDC, Department of Education, the World Bank, they show our impact. Higher self-efficacy, self-esteem and confidence, lower depression and social anxiety, less likely to skip school, greater likelihood of post-secondary attendance, particularly among racial and ethnic groups. Studies have shown that there's a 5-to-1 ROI in mentoring, tied to outcomes, better health, and increased earnings. This funding that boosts the preparation of our future workforce. So we're talking about post-secondary training and college access, career exploration, and again, we're not just talking about jobs, we're talking about fulfillment, finding dreams. Access to scholarships and work we're able to do in partnership with major Minnesota employers, Best Buy, General Mills, Cargill, Deseret, St. Cloud State, the U of M, the list goes on. The additional funding will allow us to support more youth Right now we have 350 on our waiting list. It also allows us to extend our program down to age 12 so we can start that post-secondary mindset earlier. Like so many in the room, it also allows us to address the additional challenges that we've experienced post-pandemic with much higher states of isolation. And then most importantly, gives us a greater focus on equity and inclusion. 87% of our youth are people of color. We all know, and it's been communicated even today, the massive racial disparities that exist. We all know all young people have incredible potential, but all opportunities are not presented in an equitable manner. So, frankly, we're thrilled to be in this collaboration here and give thanks for your investment in our youth and our community.
Thank you, Mr. Sukom. Next is Jean Keenan from Minnesota Family Resiliency Partnership. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Jean Keenan. I'm a provider in the Minnesota Family Resiliency Partnership. Thank you for this opportunity, and specifically thank you, Chair Zhang, for including our direct appropriation in your omnibus bill. I also want to thank Representative Ryer for being our lead author and for being such a strong advocate for our family stabilization services to help participants enter or re-enter the workforce. To the committee members who have supported our work and or signed on to our bill, thank you. Your support of our participants is moving.
Yeah.
Chair Zhang, it is very gratifying to have your support in our statewide efforts to interrupt the downward spiral that participants often face after the loss of a family's primary wage earner due to death, disability, divorce, or abandonment. Our participants are often Minnesota's unseen unemployed or underemployed who may not otherwise receive any services. And so, on behalf of those very participants, all of whom are at or below 200% of the federal poverty guideline, I also wish to extend a sincere thank you for seeing their unique needs and investing in the program specifically designed to meet those needs. These funds will increase our capacity to move participants and their families toward lasting self-sufficiency. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Jane Galpin from the International Institute of Minnesota. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Zhang and members of the committee. Pleasure to be here. Once again, thank you for this opportunity. I want to say on behalf of the International Institute of Minnesota and all of our committed staff, thank you for the inclusion of House File 576, a direct appropriation in the jobs bill that will support our medical careers pathway. This pathway program is well established in the community and very well known in the community because it provides results to its participants. The pathway starts with nursing assistant training, which those jobs now pay for many people $20 an hour, but it also helps people move into jobs that pay over $45 an hour as one-year LPNs, two-year RNs, and four-year RNs. Very important work to advance as many folks that come to the Institute that want to do that advancement because it really helps to provide stability for families. I want to thank you for your leadership in this committee and your broader support for new Americans in our state. Very important. Your investment will impact hundreds of new Americans, will help us reduce our waiting lists that we have for our programs, and help hundreds of employers in our state, employers who call us weekly, sometimes daily, asking when our next group of graduates will be ready to be hired. And that speaks to their intelligence, their commitment to the work in healthcare, and also their longevity in this field. So I want to give a special thanks to Representative Sensor Mura and to Representative Becker Finn for supporting this bill and other members in the committee for supporting this bill, and for the opportunity to say thank you and to testify to you all today.
Thank you. Next is Katie Wade from the Eastside Neighborhood Services. Welcome to committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. Thank you. I am the VP gift strategy and results at Eastside Neighborhood Services in Northeast Minneapolis. And I just wanted to thank you so much for including bill number 1208 in the omnibus bill. This will, this direct appropriation will help to fund and support more services at Eastside Neighborhood Services, specifically in our employment department, particularly seniors 55 and older, as well as youth 14 to 24, and people who are interested in a CNA program, the Certified Nursing Assistant Program. We are creating a much more tailored and specific for individuals who have complicated and complex schedules to attend the nurses' training as they are able. And we are also going to be able to expand our older adult, the 55 and older, in order to reach more seniors who are eligible for this service, as well as making sure that they not only are successful in the program, but that they are able to get into jobs and be able to retain and keep those jobs so that they can live more full, inclusive lives. And then also for our youth program, to make sure that we are able to get more feet on the ground to reach some of the youth that are not housed, and we can help them to really build a life and feel that success and that opportunity at a younger age. So thank you again so much for this direct appropriation. I really appreciate that it's a direct appropriation versus a competitive grant, because that will help us to serve people faster, and it won't, we won't get necessarily caught up in some of the other things that can come with a competitive grant, as we have seen at our agency. So again, thank you so much, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Next is Tommy Jong from CAAL. Welcome to committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Tao Mei Shong, and I'm the Executive and Network Director for the Coalition of Asian American Leaders. And today, on behalf of over 30-plus nonprofits, including Latino Lead, African American Leadership Forum, Tawahi Foundation, and many others, I want to come and thank you for investing in the nonprofit infrastructure grant program. So, Mr. Chair, I want to thank you, committee members, our co-authors, and our chief bill author, Senator Mora, for supporting this bill. This grant program has received funds since in 2017, 2019, and 2021 to create a program to build the capacity of small, culturally specific nonprofits. And today, I can report that the Nonprofit Infrastructure Grant Program is working. This effective program helps to support small nonprofits They often play an outsized role despite how small they are. And when these organizations are strengthened, the communities they serve also benefit, and our state moves closer to reducing disparities. In the three rounds of this grant program, 70 organizations totaling $3.5 million have benefited. 38 grantees have added 113 jobs, a 90% increase in their workforce, and we've helped them to strengthen their capacity and infrastructure. The demand for this program is high, and an expansion will have immediate impact. We've supported less than 20% of the 400 applications that we've received in the three cycles. This is a statewide program with 18% of both applications and successful grants being distributed to greater Minnesota. Small nonprofits face barriers in accessing and managing grants with state agencies and need technical assistance to gain knowledge and build the right systems and policies. This program is their pathway to readiness. We are committed to being accountable for responsibly stewarding state dollars and hold organizations to high standards for fiscal management, reporting, and policies. So on behalf of our 30-plus organizations, I want to thank you again for supporting and investing in small, culturally specific nonprofits. Thank you.
Next is Julie Brecky from HIRED. Welcome to committee. Ms. Brecky, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Julie Brecky. I'm the executive director of Hired. I have to start by saying it's wonderful to be in this room and hear about the exciting work that's being supported by this omnibus bill. And on behalf of Hired, I'm very excited to be included with the $400,000 direct appropriation for expanding our very effective career pathway programs. I do want to start by saying direct appropriations is an important complement to funding streams in the workforce ecosystem. And so this actually will help Hired expand the number of people that we serve, the pathways that we're able to offer, and actually be able to pick up the phone, collaborate with employers, and help prepare people that are presently on the sidelines or have been excluded from workforce opportunities because of historic or systemic exclusion. As you know from our testimony and the wonderful woman, Jennifer Chang, who told her story, we work with hundreds of people, and we start with stabilizing the family, imparting skills, going through placement, and supporting people to be successful. It's life-changing work, and we're just so excited to be able to partner with you and bring more resources to help people in this environment in particular with the workforce shortage, help people really have access to that entry-level job and be able to advance their careers. I do want to acknowledge Representative Ed Badge, our chief author, and all of you for really listening and asking great questions in our testimony. And I do recall, Representative, your call for supporting employers and their workforce inclusivity practices, and that's something that we're focusing on as well. Just a reminder, last year, Hired helped 143 individuals in this job program alone graduate from our job training programs and career pathways. 92% were gained employment through those efforts, 78% gained a credential, and all of them are happy and thriving. And excited to be embarking on this work again with you in the coming 2 years. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Brecky. Next is Kirsten Christofferson of Vivo. Welcome to committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Kirsten Christofferson Bailey. I'm from Christofferson Advocates. I'm here today in place of Kelly Matter, President and CEO of Avivo. She's traveling but very much wishes that she could be here today. Chair Zhang, first and foremost, members of committee, and thank you all and staff. Shout out to staff. And thank you all very much, and especially to our lead author, Chair Hassan. Thank you all so much for what you've done here today. I think many of us are here today because of the careful consideration of this bill. It's obvious how much time and effort you've put into this bill. Thank you for the direct appropriations for the nonprofits. Because of your leadership, these nonprofits like Avivo will be able to serve more people, and people across the state of Minnesota will be well trained and they will find good jobs. So thank you all very much.
Thank you. Next is Shane Zart from Coalition of Utility Cities. Welcome to committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Chair Zhang and members of the committee. My name is Shane Zart with the firm Flaherty and Hood and representing the Coalition of Utility Cities. And here today to thank you for a few provisions in the bill that are designed to support power plant host communities. For each of the communities that's a member of the Coalition of Utility Cities, the plant that they host makes up anywhere from 30 to 70% of the city's tax base on its own. And as you know well, many of those facilities are scheduled for retirement in the coming years. So DEED and the state have continued to increase their infrastructure that they have available to support these communities. There's a few elements of this bill that will further enhance the state's ability to do that. So most significantly, thank you for the inclusion of the $10 million for DEED's Community Energy Transition Grant Program. This is the funding request that reflects both the Governor Wall's recommendation for that program and the Coalition of Utility Cities, and was included in Representative Josiah Hill's House File 1398. And thank you also for the policy language in Article 2, Sections 4 through 6 is designed to enhance that program, enhance the collaboration between DEED and these communities as DEED administers those grants. And then I also want to thank the committee for the inclusion of the language on page 27, lines 11 through 19, That is language that came forward in the governor's revised budget recommendation for DEED, would extend the sunset of an advisory committee that's set up to encourage collaboration between communities, labor organizations, utilities, and the state as we approach some of these power plant retirements and transitions. So thank you for the inclusion of that, and thank Pete and the governor's office for recommending that. And want to close with a thank you to Chair Hassan also for working closely with Representative Hill just to make sure that these needs were reflected in your budget, and hope to see this move forward. So thank you very much.
Next is Eric Black from MDI. Welcome to committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair. Eric Black, CEO and President of MDI. I'm humbled to be here today with many organizations that are working on workforce and equity-based issues in our state. I appreciate the inclusion in your current omnibus bill for the amount that will support the 250 individuals with disabilities that work for MDI. It's important. We do great work, and we appreciate the state's continued support. However, we do know that in greater Minnesota that there are increasing workforce shortages that are impeding on economic growth and development. And we believe we have solutions. We've shown that our mobile career skills, our virtual career skills, has led to a 42% job placement in those areas. We also know that over the next 2 years, there'll be individuals that graduate from high school, transitionary schools, during the same period that exponentially STEM-related skills are needed in the workforce. If you look at that, if we don't do something today, there'll be a steeper hill to climb in 2 years. I humbly ask that this committee consider House File 1098, an additional $1 million appropriation for MDI to do statewide work. We know we can do our virtual and mobile career skills in a way that will be a solution for the state that it hasn't had to date in that area. I'd like to end by saying I was here yesterday, and I hope many of you got an opportunity, Disability Awareness Day, to see many people with disabilities, many agencies supporting those people throughout the Capitol in these hallways. I got an opportunity to be interviewed by an individual with a disability and a camera woman who also had a disability, and it was a phenomenal interview. I think Connor was his name, and I asked him, like, hey, what do you do when you're not doing this? He's like, I work at McDonald's, right? You know, he was super geeked, super excited about the work that he does. After that interview, I talked to one of the staff. I gave him my card. He's like, oh, wow, MDI, you guys do great work. This is what COSA, it's an agency right outside of St. Cloud. He's like, some of our people have been through your skill development class, the unified work, and we're excited about the new technology work that you're going to be doing. So we know firsthand that this makes a difference. And I don't know how many of you have thought about the future where the anchor man may be an individual with disability, or the weather woman will be an individual with a disability, or maybe the person that's taking film and camera here today will be an individual with a disability. But we can make a difference across disciplines in the working jobs that we do, and we can do that with the state's help. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Tawana Black from Center for Economic Inclusion. Welcome to committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you so much. Good morning. My name is Tawana Black. I'm the founder and CEO of the Center for Economic Inclusion, and I'm pleased to be here. Thank you so much, Chair Zhang. Thank you so much to members of the committee, not only for including us in this bill, but also for your continued leadership and stewardship of the vision for a state that is racially equitable and inclusive and where all people can prosper. At the Center for Economic Inclusion, we work every day to educate and equip more than 12,000 individuals and employers to ensure that they have the capacity to build anti-racist workplaces and advance our economies in a way that ensure that Minnesota continues to thrive and prosper for all people, but in particular for Black, Latino, Indigenous, and Asian individuals. Over 85% of these individuals report taking actions after participating in our programs to not only dismantle systemic racism, but also advance economies that truly do work for everyone inside their organizations. And after 1 year, those organizations are continuing to show the fruit of that work. Thanks to your previous appropriations to our program for the last 6 years, North at Work, we've been able to partner with the stewardship of Black-led workforce development organizations and community-based organizations in North Minneapolis to support and equip more than 300 African-American men to transform their employment status into jobs that pay family-sustaining wages, are anchored in employers who we're working with to drive anti-racism and inclusive workplaces, and ultimately to become the pillars and anchors in our communities who we know they are capable to be and desire to be. We've done that together because of the investments you've made in the Center for Economic Inclusion. With your continued partnership, we will continue to partner with and steward the innovation and investments that those organizations have made in our state's economy and scale that work further across the state. We know that this is possible, we know that this is necessary, and we're committed to doing this work with you. Together, we can make Minnesota the first state in the nation to overcome its disparate racial impacts, but to go beyond that and actually create a state that's economy truly does work for everyone. Thank you so much.
Next is Marcus Pope, Youth Prize. Welcome to committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Marcus Pope, president of Youth Prize, an organization focused on advancing equity and economic opportunity for young people throughout Minnesota. I want to thank you for including funding to support economic development services for African youth in Minnesota. The inclusion of this funding builds on several years of success working to provide economic opportunities for Somali and East African youth in Minnesota. We have a strong track record of partnering with the legislature, DEED, and the community to distribute this funding. Demand for this funding has been significant, as Youth Prize has had to deny over $1.5 million in worthy funding requests in 2022. Despite limited resources, partners selected in 2022 served nearly 1,800 youth, providing career exploration, connections to career pathways, and assistance in securing education and credentials needed to thrive in today's workforce and economy. Your appropriation builds on this success by providing increased funding, which will allow us to serve additional African communities, communities that are well positioned to impact our economic vitality in Minnesota even more. Again, thank you for your support, and we look forward to partnering with you going forward.
Thank you. Members in the audience, if your cell phone is on, please put it on silence. And if you can't put it on silence, please leave the room. Thank you. Next is Mr. Muhammad Farah.
Mr. Chair, for those who know Muhammad Farah, I am not Muhammad Farah. He unexpectedly could not be here. Those who are laughing probably understand that joke. Mr. Chair, my name is Shep Harris. I'm with Frederickson and Byron, representing Kajog. In place of Mr. Farah, so I can be quick and then move into the next testifier's slot as well. Mr. Chair and members, as I said, Shep Harris with Frederickson and Byron on behalf of Kajog. I want to thank the chair and encourage members of the committee to support the language and funding that is in the proposed delete all amendment that Mr. Pope just spoke to. As you've seen the language, Kajog for a number of years has been a subgrantee of this program of reaching out to the East African community, and has matured to a point now where they're able to be a partner side by side with Youth Prize and working in coordination with DEED on this. The funding for this is critical to serving growing African populations, whether they be in Willmar or Moorhead or Faribault or even here in the Twin Cities. As you heard Mr. Pope just say, that the funding requests have far outpaced the actual money that has been allocated in recent years. We see this as an opportunity. There's a workforce shortage here in Minnesota, and this is an opportunity to address that workforce shortage and at the same time to address a growing demand in the African communities around the state to help with training and with employment opportunities. So thank you again, Mr. Chair, for the chance to speak for Mr. Farah.
And you are also speaking on the extended employment program?
It's very, very convenient, Mr. Chair, that I get to sit here as well. So thank you. Again, Shep Harris with Frederickson Byron here speaking on behalf of the Minnesota Organization for Habilitation and Rehabilitation. I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, again for including language for the Extended Employment Services Program, increased funding for that program, as well as the inflation adjustment factor. I definitely want to do a shout out to Vice Chair Brand for his, I just got the salute there, for chief authoring this bill, for being a strong advocate for it publicly and privately as well. You might recall the compelling testimony that was given a couple weeks ago on this proposal. We had people from, whether it was MRCI or WCOSA or for Tasks Unlimited, that would be the Twin Cities, that would be the Eagan, Southeast area of the metro area, or even out WCI, which is Wilmer. Members, you all have these organizations in your districts that serve people with disabilities who desperately want jobs, who desperately want to be trained for the jobs and desperately want to keep the jobs. And the issue, though, as you may recall, is this is a pay-for-performance program. This is an outcomes-driven program. If the nonprofit organizations don't do their job, they do not get reimbursed by the state. These nonprofits have an excellent partnership with DEED and have been successful for a number of decades in helping to employ people with disabilities in partnership with small businesses in your communities. But as we've seen, the cost increases have gone up 15%. Since 2020, inflation has gone up 20%. And so to keep the to keep people at these nonprofit organizations to help assist and train members of our community to have these jobs, it is vital that we have this increase. And from a predictability, a budget predictability perspective, it's important that the inflation adjustment factor be included so that the nonprofits can more predictably address their budget from year to year, since the last time they received a funding increase like this was more than 5 years ago. So again, Mr. Chair, members, thank you very much. Really appreciate your support for this.
Next is Jamie Poole from Minnesota Grocers Association. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Jamie Poole, President of the Minnesota Grocers Association and Foundation, Chair Zhang, members of the committee, Representative Ryer. Thank you so much for your beliefs in our Cart to Careers program. I find it ironic, I'm the last testifier in theory here on the list, and today is National Mom and Pop Business Owners Day, so I think it's wonderful to be able to bring this full circle as the businesses that get to employ these folks. What a wonderful group today, and what a wonderful bill you've put together. We have such a unique culture in Minnesota of hundreds of grocery and convenience stores, many of whom are independent, multi-generational, and locally owned. From farm to fork, our industry employs one out of every 20 jobs. We are incredibly labor intensive. The support of the Carts to Careers program by this committee allows for the opportunity to grow this talent from non-traditional learners in a circular format promoting local colleges. This brings lifelong careers that are available to workers and also builds a healthy and viable community. The funding supports the continuation of a very successful retail management certificate program, which started in 2019 in conjunction with Alexandria Technical College. The Carts to Careers program now will have the ability to expand its meat cutter program in partnership with Ridgewater Community College to address the chronic shortage of meat cutters. We are also enthusiastic about our new transportation and driver program that will allow warehouse workers already working within the industry to advance their careers by training them to become in-demand transportation professionals. As a state, we understand the importance of having viable brick-and-mortar grocery stores and a robust supply chain. This takes a strong, happy, and fulfilled workforce. We are incredibly proud of the opportunities from farm to fork our careers provide. As one of our graduates eloquently put it, this program helped me find my way and guided me to where I belong in the retail field. Thank you again, committee members, Chair Zhang and Representative Ryer, for your investment in the Carts to Careers program.
Thank you, Ms. Poole. Members, we also have 12 letters in your packet. There's one from the YWCA, from the 100% campaign, Emerge, Pillsbury United, Rise, Twin Cities Rise, Coalition of Utility Cities, the Unidos Minnesota, New Justice Project, Santa Foundation, and Better Futures Minnesota. So please take a look at those letters when you have a moment. We have about 25 minutes left, so I will open up to members of the audience. If anyone wants to testify, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Zhang, members. My name's Elliot Butai. I'm the Senior Policy Coordinator at NAMI Minnesota, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. NAMI represents people with mental illnesses and families who are also impacted. We want to thank you for including the $4 million for individual placement and supports for people with mental illnesses. You heard in this committee that this program is highly successful, and without this funding, programs would be cut. And also because of this appropriation, the program can expand to serve more people across the state. So we want to thank Representative Sensenmura for carrying this provision in House File 1697. I also want to mention one piece from House File 1697 that was not included in this bill is a task force to examine barriers to people with mental illnesses to employment. So not everyone has a serious mental illness or may qualify for IPS services. I live with a mental illness, and as you all know, working around here can be occasionally stressful, but I also find it very fulfilling. And this is just one example, you know, of many people's experiences. We know anxiety and depression saw record increases during the pandemic, and they are continuing. We also, as a society, have thankfully begun to recognize things that we may not have historically, like the impact of trauma. And so all people with mental illnesses deserve to do fulfilling work. And as you've heard, work does work in helping people recover. So we do have amendment language that we think would remove some of the administrative work of establishing a formal task force, but still directs DEED to engage with stakeholders, including employers, which was raised in this committee. So we hope you'll consider this language either this year or next, and we thank you for your hard work this session.
Thank you. Any other members of the audience who wish to testify? Seeing none, discussion on the bill. Lead Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I assume that we'll have more time to talk on Friday. I think we're going to be doing some more things. I think just some general comments. You know, again, overall, there's some really good things in this bill that I very much support. I think this committee has worked a lot to hear a lot of important testimony this session. Mr. Chair, you were very good at getting a lot of folks to the table. You made sure that if a bill wanted to be heard, it was heard. And so, again, I appreciate the work of that. What I think I wanted to maybe address a little bit today was the bills we didn't hear that are in this bill. And I'm surprised, and I maybe want to better understand it so that I maybe understand the process. I've not yet been a chair. But what I hear when I hear a lot of people sharing that this is the governor's wish or the governor's bill or not the governor's bill but the governor's proposal in this or other bills, I want to make sure we understand as members, it doesn't mean they don't not get a bill. Hearing. The hearing is important. That's what I think we do our best work is right here to ask those questions. So, again, I'm kind of an energy wonk, and I know that there's Mr. Zart was here today with the Coalition of Utility Cities, and the power plant initiative and the transition grant is $10 million. That's a lot of money, and I would love to hear more about that. House File 1398, I don't know when and how we learn more about that. It's not in front of our committee. It's sitting in another committee. I don't know why it is here and not maybe in energy. So those are some questions I have, Mr. Chair, that I don't want to belabor it. There is I'm not sure if we heard a bill for $15 million for Drive for Five initiative. I think we had touched on it, but I don't know that we heard the bill because I don't think it's sitting in our committee. I just want to maybe better understand the process, and maybe that's, as the lead, I feel this responsibility to ask those questions with a lot of respect to this process, but I don't understand. Why are we passing millions of dollars to people, or not to people, to organizations that we did not hear from? They didn't do the work, or at least they didn't get in line like everybody else did to be granted some of these dollars. So if you could help me with that, Mr. Chair, I'd appreciate that.
Thank you, Lead Baker. As far as for the governor's bill, and the bill was given to us very late in committee hearing. And so my expectation is that they will be here Friday to speak on their bill. And if you have questions, concerns, you know, that will be the time for it. I know that there are some other portions in this bill that we have not heard. They were moved from the Economic Development Committee to our committee at the direction of the speaker, and so I'm more than happy to have that conversation with you offline about it too. And you raised some very valid concerns about it, so I'm more than happy to have a conversation with Lee Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that approach to this. I want to make sure we give enough time that on Friday or whenever the best time is. I know we've got deadlines, we've got to wrap things up, but we've all worked under the same deadlines from day one, and the governor needs to know that too. If they came in late, there must be some good reasons, but I want to understand these programs so that we can either support them or not support them. And what I don't like is making it seem like we're taking bills in here and spending millions of dollars when we don't get to see all the work that we are supposed to stamp and give our approval to, because I can't support a bill that I don't feel we've been really kind of had a chance to really vet through. So I look forward to hearing that, more conversation about that on Friday. I plan to make sure we can try to get through all that stuff too. But again, I there's some good things in the bill, but I just wanted to make sure that we understood the process for the rest of the week and to make sure we hear the bills that we are proposing to take out of our jurisdiction to be spending money on. And so I'm looking forward to that conversation, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Lee Baker. Any other discussions? Seeing none, members, I'm going to remind you to keep all the bills and the bill and the amendment in a nonpartisan summary in your folders for Friday. And if there are any amendments, they are due at 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. Seeing no further discussions, the committee is adjourned until Friday at 8:30 a.m. right here in this room.